I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, welcome. Good news. It's a really simple idea. We've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this show, whether a teacher, a coach, a professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of this show with us, so please do consider telling us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with those nominations and with your story ideas at teachersLounge@niu.edu. And on our show today, Katie Armstrong is a family and consumer science teacher at West Aurora High School. Now, some of us may know family and consumer science as home ec. Maybe we're dating ourselves, maybe that changed a while ago, but it means that Katie teaches all sorts of courses, from foods to interior design to giving future teachers a peek behind the curtain of how learning really happens. And with those subjects, it's not that hard to show students why it's relevant to their lives. We all want to have a good education, yes, and we all want to eat good food and live in a beautiful home. And Katie allows them to think critically about the art and craft behind that. And she's also a leader of her school's FCCLA chapter. And if you don't know, FCCLA is the Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America. It's a national organization that allows her students to compete across the country in events ranging from leadership to interior design.
If the kid has a passion, and most kids do, there's a project to feed that passion and allow them to explore it more.
In fact, one of her students won first place nationally in interior design this year. Pretty awesome. We talk all about that and more, but first, we have another education story we want to share. New reports show that big swaths of Northern Illinois have a lack of mental and behavioral health providers for children. And I got to learn more. A pediatrician notices that a young child is struggling and needs mental health support like a psychologist. They make a referral and the child gets support. Simple as that, right? Advocates say, if only. They say there are many steps in the process where they lose families. After you realize your child needs help, you could spend months on a wait list to see a mental health provider. The nearest therapist might be an hour or two away, and maybe your insurance doesn't cover it, or you finally see someone, but then the therapist quits because there aren't enough providers, and high turnover and burnout are common.
Now you have to start over, because you have to build that trust with that therapist.
That's Lou Ann Hayes. She's a regional council manager with Birth to Five Illinois, a state initiative analyzing early childhood needs across the state, and her region covers Stevenson, Carroll, and Joe Davies counties. And Birth to Five's new report focuses on access to mental and behavioral health providers.
It's very sad. We are inadequate with the needs of our community.
Hayes says that's the headline. There are simply not enough mental health providers, from clinics to schools to hospitals. And that creates a series of other issues that compound stress for families right from the beginning. She says most people get referrals from their pediatrician or their child's doctor. But in her three-county region, there is only one pediatrician and over 5,000 children. So that can make it harder to catch a developmental delay or a mental health concern. Livia Bain is another regional council manager, and her region includes Boone and Winnebago counties. And she says because of the lack of providers, once you get that referral, then you start waiting. It could take months just to get a screening to figure out what kind of therapy they need. And the waits are long, even if the child's mental health situation is very serious.
When you're in a crisis, you may find yourself waiting between 2 and up to 6 months for your child to be seen, to have the referral even met, or to actually sit down, you know, with a healthcare provider and then to come up with a plan.
Lindsay McDaniel knows this too well. She's a Freeport teacher with 5 children, some of whom have gone through mental health crises.
We got on the list for the Research Triangle of Chicago for a psychological exam. Our appointment was booked 9 months out. 9 months. I mean, how devastating as a parent to know with these explosive, disastrous behaviors that are turning your house upside down that you have 9 months to wait before you're even going to have testing. After the testing's done, they have 60 more days to fill out the paperwork.
And after all of that, you might find a therapist or a psychiatrist, but depending on where you live, they might not be close. McDaniel's had that issue too, coming from Freeport.
I exhausted everything from Stevenson County into Winnebago County, even into the Chicago area. And we just really struggled to find help that was making any kind of long-term difference.
Hayes says she's seen people have to drive to Madison or Peoria to see a provider. That could be impossible for some families without reliable transportation. And many do offer telehealth services, but not many are willing to make the trip up to Northwest Illinois. Now, say you've connected with a professional in your area, and insurance could still throw a wrench in the process. It can be a challenge to find providers who take state-funded insurance, and the level of mental health services available is often based on the tier of insurance you have. Livia Bain says that's definitely true for public insurance like Medicare, but also for private coverage.
Those co-pays just add up over time and become very financially prohibitive to seeking the services.
And when the short staff providers burn out and leave, the process starts all over again. So they say the situation is rough, but what can be done? Bain says local investment can help. In 2020, Winnebago County voters approved a half-cent sales tax to fund mental health services, and so far, more than $20 million has been distributed to over 40 providers. And she says that's helped reach more people who need services, but they haven't completely met the need yet. Hayes says Birth to Five is also working on an action plan over the next few months with even more concrete ideas to improve mental and behavioral health access. And for the parents of these kids, it can't come soon enough. All right, now it's time for my conversation with family and consumer science teacher from West Aurora High School, Katie Armstrong. And we start off talking about what it was like teaching a virtual interior design class full of freshmen back at the beginning of the pandemic.
Last year was the last time I had a student from when we were on Zoom. Like she was a graduating senior. And we talked about how if you had Armstrong Interior Design your freshman year, like you had grit. Like,
is there a medal or a certificate that comes with that?
Yeah. Yeah. But we laugh at it because, you know, we were doing the best with what we had. And I still had students compete in interior design that year. I still did well as best you can in those circumstances. That was challenging.
We're knocking on all the wood available that we don't have to go through that again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I was thinking about this too, and I definitely want to talk a ton more about interior design and all the, you know, FCCLA stuff that you do.
Oh, yeah.
But I was thinking about this, and actually this Friday will be the 5-year anniversary that we've been doing the show. So we've been doing the show for a long time now. And thank you. I was not just fishing for compliments there. But the reason I bring that up is to say that I think that you are the first West Aurora teacher we've had on the show in five years, which is just wild to me considering A, the size of the district, but also, like, I've got a lot of family connections to West Aurora. My dad went to graduate from West High, and also my grandmother graduated from West Aurora, so shout out to the class of 1951. We got some representation there, but I have not had any teachers from West Aurora until you, so I'm really excited about this.
Well, I am privileged to be your first, and I'm also an NIU grad, so I am very proud to be able to be on an NIU radio show.
So much synergy today.
All good things. I think West Aurora is a really special place because of the number of families that are generational throughout the district, that their grandparents, great-grandparents, the district is over 150 years old. It's pretty cool. And then there's many, many teachers that come back to the district to teach. And I think that that speaks volumes that you want to come back to the community that made you.
For sure. There's a chance that my 90-year-old grandmother's listening to the show right now.
I hope she is.
So
probably because she loves
Jane,
you, but I hope she is.
Elsie Jane, West Aurora is in good hands. Do not worry. But anyway, so I wanted to ask too, and we mentioned this a little bit up top, but you teach family and consumer sciences.
I sure do.
And I was curious, really quick, if you could walk us through kind of what kind of courses, careers kind of fall underneath that umbrella, and then kind of like a little bit of like where do you fit in under again, this large figurative umbrella that we're explaining.
Oh, I'd be happy to. So family and consumer sciences prior to the 1990s was actually called home economics. And
I think a lot of us still think of that.
Yeah. So I just want to get that out there. And they changed the name. And so if you take any courses related to culinary arts and hospitality, child development and human development, fashion design and merchandising, as well as interior design. And then many schools will also have consumer education under that umbrella as well. And with regard to careers, there are some very obvious career paths like culinary, hospitality, fashion. But then there's also that some not as obvious career paths. For example, social work, you would benefit from having taken a child development course, or nursing, you would benefit from having taken a child development course and a nutrition class. I think that's one of my favorite parts of family and consumer sciences, is that it is a well-rounded student. And then I also share with my students that you don't have to become a chef to benefit from knowing how to cook. You don't have to become an interior designer to benefit from a beautiful home, that you're learning skills that will benefit you outside of your education. Because many students don't realize, like, some of them might not continue formal education, but they might, continue with job training outside of it, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
And then the classes that you teach underneath that umbrella, mm-hmm. is it mainly interior design?
I've taught a variety of culinary courses. Currently, I teach a class called Advanced Foods, but many of my students that might be listening to this probably had me as an Intro to Foods 1 or Intro to Foods 2 teacher. But I teach Advanced Foods, which the first semester is baking and pastries, and the second semester is international foods. It's actually one of my favorite semesters to teach for foods, because we all got to eat. I teach interior design and interior design independent study. And then this will be my fourth year teaching dual credit intro to education. That's a newer thing in education within the past 10 years, that students can earn credit through their local community college and the high school. And that particular program that I teach, they have a relationship with Waubonsie Community College and Northern Illinois University that they could earn a bachelor's degree in 3 years if they take that course with me.
And those would be for folks that are hoping to pursue education, become teachers too.
Absolutely. Mostly seniors. I've had the pleasure of having juniors and seniors in it. And teaching that class, it's interesting because I'm a different teacher for that class, because it is a college level course, but you're kind of also like colleagues. These are your future colleagues that you want them to come back to the district, and you're sharing with them the behind the curtain of education, that there's more than the 50 minutes that they're seeing their teacher in their classroom.
That's what the exact phrase I was going to use, the giving people a peek behind the curtain,
yes.
Right? Because there's kids that have been in education for, 12 plus years, if they're seniors in high school. And so they feel like they have a pretty good idea of how education works, but then you get to be the one that pulls back the curtain, like you said, shows just how much that goes into the, five shows a day of,
yes.
50 minutes or whatever they're in class. I bet you get some really interesting reactions from people that have just never had to think about what
yes.
goes into it.
Or they, when you're the student, developmentally, we're very egocentric when we're students and we do think we know everything. And then going back, you're like, I don't remember it being like this at all. This is a part that you don't see. And I'm just learning how teachers are taking attendance is fascinating to them, because they're like, oh, that's
really
that's how, yeah, because they don't see that part, right? It's new to them. Or why teachers do the things that they do. And it's like, well, actually there's some legal and some ethical component to it. And, maybe it's something within the contract that we have to, that we're pointing out to. And so having some of, like, even just today I met with my FCCLA officers, and they were, kind of grousing about how they didn't want to start school on a Monday. And I was like, do you want to know why we're starting school on a Monday? And explaining to them that that way teachers could have an extra day to get ready for them. And they're like, oh, and I'm like, there's more to it. You don't just show up and everything's ready.
And you're like, I wish it were that easy.
Yeah,
that would make all of our lives so much easier.
Yeah.
But that almost feels like a class that everyone should have to take.
Yeah, and just realizing, like, in general education, you have everybody from the student that has two parents and maybe a grandparent at home every day there to support them, and they're able to do the activities that they want. And then you're realizing, like, oh, some of my peers are from a single parent household and their siblings are counting on them to help them get on the bus, or they're working a night job to help finance things at their house, or there's a homeless population within our school district. And then, you know, so those are some, you know, at home needs. And then you start talking about social needs and students that maybe they have special education, you know, they're diverse learners, or what about your students that come from diverse backgrounds? You want them to feel seen and heard in your curriculum, and that it all matters. You're trying so hard to make sure everybody within your classroom is seen and heard and has their needs met. And that realization it's very eye-opening for a 17-year-old that wants to go into education, that it's so much more than, I love teaching this subject or I love working with kids. You're realizing that those kids really are counting on you to help fulfill some needs that they can't get met, or communicate to people that can help get those needs met.
You know, in between that class and your interior design and then the cooking classes, it's really easy for you to explain to your students why the things they are doing are going to be relevant to them, to their daily lives. Because like you said, everyone wants to have a beautiful home. Everyone wants to eat good food.
Yes.
So it's really easy to make that, in a, you know, pun intended completely, for that to hit close to home when you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we all benefit from an educated society too. So, I will say that on the same note, like, you wear so many different teacher hats, and I always tell people, I'm like, I am never bored. There's no time to be bored when I'm working.
Yeah. And so you've got that, and you mentioned that in your foods class, and I don't forget if you mentioned this is the intro class or the class you're teaching currently too, but that the first semester is more baking. Second semester is when you dive into the world of international foods.
I love that class, yes.
Why is that one of your favorite classes?
I love serving perspective. I love, like, bringing to their attention that the world that they know is their normal, but in another part of the world that is their normal. And why is it that they're normal? Well, it's because of the food that grows in that area. It's because of cultural differences, religious differences, climate differences, and just realizing why that is. It could be something as simple as, you know, I'm teaching in a suburban school in the Midwest. These students do not like fish. Okay, like, that is not a thing that they like. They will throw it out. They don't want to try it. It's not their thing. To be fair, though, we're landlocked. There's not a lot of fish that's going to be natural here in the Chicagoland suburbs. Whereas, you know, other parts of the world, that's their number one protein source. And just that realization that beef is in some places a religious, like, you wouldn't even choose to eat it because of it, or it's not going to be common because of where they're living. So it's very interesting. I love teaching that class. They learn so much. And then each student brings their own life experiences to it, and you get to learn with them and from them. And that's the good stuff.
And hopefully you get to do some cooking while we're out.
Oh,
there.
Definitely. You got to eat. You got to eat.
Do you have any moments of, again, these very Midwestern kids who, you know, I feel like this too, and this is absolutely no shade at all to my parents or the way they cooked when I was a kid, but I don't think that I had cumin until I was 26. You know what I mean? Like, and so I think about it all the time. And like, I remember when I moved out on my own and I realized that the community that I lived in was like 30% Indian, and we had all these Indian grocers, all these Indian restaurants around
us.
And just like blew my mind. I was like, this is the best thing I've had in my entire life. I had no idea that it was there, even though it was in my backyard. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you've had some really cool moments in those classes where students have, you know, you've served up a new perspective and they've had their minds and taste buds blown. Is there anything that you can think of where you remember that type of thing?
So when you mentioned Indian food, we make these Indian samosas every year, and I love samosas, and that's always an easy sell for my students, because I explain to them that, you know, they're like high flavor. And so a lot of my students, West Aurora has a very high Hispanic population, so they like a lot of flavor and a lot of heat in their food. So Indian food translates really well to that. But a moment that stands out to me is when I teach students how to roll sushi. And now, I already told you that we don't do fish, okay? They throw it out. So we just do a vegetarian roll because we have to meet them halfway. But I share with them, you know, they're trying something new, and there's new flavors, new textures, new techniques. And, you know, I shared with them, I'm like, had you ever had sushi before? And someone would be like, you know, most students, it's a no. And I was like, next time somebody asks you if you've ever had sushi, you're going to be able to say, I've had it and I've rolled my own. And that's pretty cool. Not everyone can say that.
Definitely not. That's really, and I've never done that before. Right? So I wish I was in there trying to roll my own. That's fantastic.
It's a very cool moment I feel like it's such a novel thing. You're not going to have the equipment for this at home. It takes a tremendous amount of knife work that you start to gain a new appreciation for. If you were to order it off the menu, now you know why the rolls are $16. And just that moment of like, well, I actually know what goes into making this and why it's so important to do it that way. And I love that perspective.
And just in the same way that probably most of the people that are in your foods class are not going in your foods class because they want to be professional chefs. You just want to be able to cook so you can live.
Yes.
And in that same way, you know, I imagine there's a lot of people who are in your like interior design classes that don't necessarily want to, you know, major in interior design or do that professionally. But like you mentioned, we all want to have a beautiful house. And I think a lot of us, whether or not that we can articulate it or not, kind of have a broad understanding of what we do and don't like.
Yes.
But haven't spent a lot of times thinking about the craft of it and the art of it. I'm curious that those same things of like those intro lessons where we're really starting to let things click with kids who are really thinking about these things for the first time when it comes to interior design.
Yes. I love sharing with them housing differences. That one, you know, you only have so much time within your curriculum to go into depth on a lot of things, but between foods and interior design, like sharing with them that, you know, some cultures don't have an oven in their house. What? What do you mean there's no oven? I'm like, no, there's no oven because the square footage within the apartment is so small and everything's quick cook. That specifically Asian countries, a lot of it, they might just have a hot plate that they put on the counter because space saving is such a big deal, and everything's cut to quick cook sizes for quick service. That like in many countries throughout Europe and Asia, the washer and dryer are going to be one unit. That just can't even imagine that.
You're like, I didn't even know we had the technology.
Yes, I had the pleasure of back in June of this year, I took 22 students with three more chaperones to London and Paris. And you think you know about things, and then you're there and you're like, what is this? What is this? And, you know, realizing that these are very old cities and there's reasons for why things are the way that they are and why things changed. And there's a lot of overlap with culinary and interior design on a trip like that and why people are doing the things that they're doing. I mean, These are suburban kids that saw a bidet for the first time. It's great.
Eye-opening. Yeah. Wow. What a day that is.
Yeah, they're like, why is the toilet square? I'm like, that's different.
Yeah, it's really fun because we're talking about both like practical skills, like cooking and design, but also, again, the why behind it.
Yes.
And like there are cultural, there are so, you know, economic, there are so many different reasons that we do the things that we do aside from just, I like how this looks.
Absolutely. And then just an appreciation for the art and detail that go into these, that you realize that somebody, you know, like we saw Christopher Wren's masterpiece, St. Paul's Cathedral, and you realize like someone dreamed up every single detail of this beautiful cathedral so that you could stand here and enjoy it today.
Yeah.
And it's overwhelming, yeah, the amount of detail that people are putting into it. And sometimes in class, you have to have that conversation of like, we're at check the box and we're going to need to go. I tell them that I say, oh, ABE, always be extra. We always have to go a little bit further and do a little bit more than just the basic, because anybody can be basic. We're going to be better than that.
Better than basic. Are the kids into minimalism still? Have we moved beyond that era into a little bit more maximalist? Because I remember when I was like, I feel like 10 years ago, there was this huge like minimalist movement, and I could feel the backlash even for me. I'm like, no. I want people to know about the things that I have.
Yes. When you say that, I think of Miss Sophia Gove. Hi, Sophia Gove, if you're listening. And she was a maximalist in every way. Like, I mean, she put so much thought and detail into everything that she designed. But I say in interior design right now, there is a movement of like, how do I describe this? It's no longer minimalist, but it's like an elevated modern that they're trying to like, and they're slowly moving away from farmhouse. That was big for a long time.
Progressed. I'll tell you what, the people in my circles, they hate the farmhouse. I had no idea that people had such strong feelings about it. They can't stand it.
It was really popular for a really long time. And if you have a farmhouse home, that is your home. You should love your home.
God love you.
But the students are finally going away from gray. I tell them that the millennial gray movement needs to exit.
Its watch is over.
Yes. There's more details coming in with like ceiling details and it's kind of like a revival of mid-century modern and like the contemporary move, like it's slowly evolving and changing, but I don't think it has like a true.
We found a harmony here.
Yeah, like I think the word probably is eclectic, that they're taking what they like from different styles and making it theirs, and they don't know what the style is, and that's okay, because part of it is them defining what they like, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah, every time we drive by an old house where the bricks have been painted white, I can feel my girlfriend's brain short circuit just a little bit.
Oh, it all.
But again, more power to you. I know. If that's what you're into, go for it.
It all comes back around. That's what I tell them. Like, it all comes back around. Whatever was trendy for a while, the opposite will come in, and you know, like white kitchens were in, now then dual colored kitchens were in. Now we're starting to see wood come back.
And I think that's great, though. I think that's reassuring that you're not wrong. You're just a little bit early.
No, and that it's important to I really tried to have them like put them like that they're working with a client, and that you need to do what's best for the client. If the client says that this is the style that they want, how can you weave your style into that? so that you're meeting the client's needs. Because if you were to pursue a career in this, that's how you make money. There's a lot of students wanting things to be perfect, and you'll have to come in and explain, like, truthfully, what's going to happen is you're presented to a client and they're going to tell you things that they like and things that you have to go change because they're the ones paying. And that's how it works. So there's no perfect. You have to have, like, you need to have something to present and be flexible and willing to adapt the design to better meet the needs of the client. That no matter how perfect you think your art vision is, at the end of the day, it's what the client wants. Some clients will let you do whatever you want. Treasure them. Most clients will not.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you about is that, and I think that we've alluded to it a little bit, is that you're also an advisor for your high school's Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America, FCCLA. Man, we love acronyms in education. But for folks that aren't familiar with that organization and what you guys do, can you explain a little bit?
I am a very proud advisor for FCCLA. This will be my 14th year involved in FCCLA in some way, shape, or form. And it is a student leadership program that you can find chapters in schools in 47 states, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. There's something for everybody within FCCLA, whether you have a passion for community service or public advocacy. Perhaps you want to develop your career skills. There's so many leadership opportunities at your local school, your state, as well as I've even had students try to prepare themselves to be a national officer. And I think that that's what's really special about FCCLA is that it's so much bigger than the school that you're at. And I've had the pleasure of going to the National Leadership Conference 10 times. I had students qualify 12 times, but there was like some virus a couple years ago. Nobody traveled. It was weird. But yeah, that's what happened. And when you're in this convention center surrounded by, you know, anywhere, some years 8,000, some years as many as 12,000 other teens that are there for the same reason you are, you realize that you're part of something bigger. And something that I appreciate about FCCLA is that they're all about families first. So with family and consumer sciences, I feel like everything that I do in my class can directly connect to FCCLA in some way. So I'm really passionate about that.
And so you have students that are able to be a part of the organization, go to the, you know, national convention. And I know that there are also there's like competitions that you can be a part of on the local level, on the state level, and also on the national level too. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Shout out to Juliet Horvath, who was first place nationally in interior design this year.
No kidding.
Yes, from West Aurora High School, Juliet Horvath. Absolutely. Big deal.
That's amazing. Whoa.
So let's take a look at like what that would have taken for a student from Aurora, Illinois to end up in Seattle, Washington, winning nationals. She started working on her project in September of 2023, and she went to sectionals in February, and you have to qualify for state, and that can be hard. Different years, there's a different number of students that can qualify for state depending on how many people are in your event. So she went on to state, and we have state conference in Springfield, Illinois. And at state, only the top two scores in her event got to advance to Seattle, Washington. So when you're there, you're with the best of the best from 47 states, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. And that's a pretty big deal that you were first place out of all those. It's pretty exciting.
That's wild. Yeah. Have you guys had people win nationals like that before?
In 2014, I had a student win first place nationally in interior design. In my classroom, one of my favorite mementos that I created is students that qualified for state in interior design and students that qualified for nationals in interior design. So if you make it, your name is in my classroom forever and ever.
That's amazing. So, like, again, for the student that you just had that just won nationals, when you talk about, like, what that competition looks like, right, you're working your way through sectionals in the state tournament for interior design, like, what does that competition look like?
Good question. This year, so they were given the floor plan of a warehouse, and they had a client, and their client wanted them to create a dog rescue from that warehouse. Ooh. So I believe it was something like 11 rooms that they had to space plan within that warehouse. And the kids are researching, like, what colors can dogs see? How do you build, like, how do you design a dog washing station for a handicapped dog? Because we're more empathetic to animals than people. So they were more apt to designing a dog washing station, thinking about, like, the three-legged dog than they would have been for somebody that's in a wheelchair. I know that sounds bad, but they're kids. They're kids. They're still developing empathy for others. And they had to have offices and a break room and a whelping room for the dogs to give birth and an isolation room for the dogs that are sick. And I was like, it sounds a lot because it is a lot, but they did great. I'm fortunate I had many students qualify for state this year in that event. And I had Brenda Maravilla qualified in the freshman sophomore category, and then Juliet qualified in the junior senior category. And that's just an example of, like, one event. We had Indigo McCurdy qualify. She made a beautiful floral dress with boning, and she created her own pattern for fashion construction, where they have to make a full garment. I've had students do leadership events, where I like the leadership event because it's all about personal growth, and that's sometimes very difficult.
That seems a little bit difficult to calculate.
Yes, that they have to do, like, a whole, there's, like, a questionnaire, and they have to talk to people that they know, like, what do you think I should work on? And then they have to make a plan and show evidence of their own personal growth. There's events for parliamentary procedure. So, you know, that overlap with business and political movements. There's advocacy for public policy. I've had students do public presentation where they have to present something that they're passionate about to three different audiences. And that one, I've actually had two of my favorite projects come out of that. One was a student that did bringing awareness to mental health and suicide related to the LGBTQIA+ community. And the other student did, so that was Abigail Rowe. Hi, Abby.
Shout out.
And then Sabrina Zabilet did a project on the mental health of teachers and what teachers can do to support their mental health and what districts should consider doing to better support the mental health of their teachers. But I think one of my favorite things of FCCLA is if the kid has a passion, and most kids do, there's a project to feed that passion and allow them to explore it more.
That's awesome. You know, you've been a part of this for 14 years, yes. Especially since this is, like, leadership centric, and you've had, you know, you've been a part of it for so long. You've gotten so many conventions. You've worked with so many students. Do you feel like it's changed, you know, your leadership style and the way that you lead in your classrooms, having been a part of the organization for so long?
Oh, 100%. That's a really good question, Peter. I'd say, like, something that you start to learn over time is if the student doesn't want it, like, you can't want it more than the student does. Like, just because I see something in them and I know I have this platform that could help them explore it, they have to want to do it. And I think that's with anything related to kids, that we have the opportunity in education to help them see their potential and build their skills, but they still have to do the hard part, which is the real work of it. Another thing that I've learned over time is that we, as leaders, we need to approach the people that we're leading in different ways. I actually just talked with my FCCLA officers this morning about that you build the relationship so that you know how to approach different people in a way that's meaningful for them. Some students are going to require you to be more gentle. Some students are going to need a different type of affirmation for them to feel safe in exploring this new area. And some students come in like ready to rock and roll, and they need you to let them do something. So learning that the same approach with every kid is not going to work. And that's okay. That's okay. Yeah.
And then Katie, we always like to ask people about their teacher origin stories a little bit. We've plenty of people on this show that have wanted to be a teacher as long as they can remember. They're teaching classrooms full of stuffed animals in their bedroom, or roping their siblings into it, or have pen pals who they grade papers back and forth with. We've got that one too. And then plenty of people who come to it later on in life, career change, other various things when they're in school. What did it look like for you? Did you always want to be a teacher, or is it something that kind of developed as you made your way through school?
I did not know what I wanted to be when I grew up, Peter.
Oh, me neither. I'm glad glad that another proud member of this group that I was no idea.
And I think it helps me be a better teacher because of it, because there's a lot of pressure to know what you're supposed to do your senior year.
Oh, and you're so jealous of the clarity that people have at 17. I certainly didn't.
I'm like, man, I wish I knew what I wanted to do. Shout out to my incredible teacher, Mr. Walter Downing. Oh, he was such an incredible mentor to me. He knew I was supposed to be a teacher. And my mom knew I was supposed to be a teacher because I like to talk, Peter.
So you were the last one to find out about this then?
I was like, Mr. Downing, I don't want to read the same book every year for 30 years. I was so wrong about education, Peter.
He told you to your face too, this is what you need to be doing. And you were like, nah, you don't know.
I was like, no, I will be bored. I don't want to be bored. Teaching is not boring. Whoever out there thinks that the teacher just recycles and reuses everything every year, please come shadow me. Because every year is a new adventure, because the best part is learning with the kids. And if you are open to that flexibility and to changing what you're doing to better meet the needs of your kids, it's more fun for you and it's more meaningful for the kid. But I'd say in college, I kind of floundered a bit because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a guidance counselor because I had a great counselor, Mrs. Cheryl Crosby. She retired many years ago, but she was so good to me. She always showed me kindness. And I remember telling that to Mr. Downing, and he's like, oh, you want to deal with the real problems. And I was like, no, I don't want the real problems. And now as an educator, I'm like, oh no, counselors are dealing with some heavy things every day. So I started, they said, at the time in the state of Illinois, you had to teach before you could go into counseling. And they said, oh, start taking some of these human development classes. And it's funny how life works, because it's exactly where I was supposed to be. I had already been working in retail and restaurants. I was supposed to go into family consumer sciences. I'd always had a passion for working with people and helping them. And as I went through the process of getting my teaching certificate, I was like, no, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be with kids. And I love it. I'm so thankful that my family supported me, that they were nervous that I wasn't going to figure out what I wanted to do. And it takes a different kind of love to see people through that stage. And I eventually found my footing and I got a great job at West Aurora. Like I said, I'm entering year 14 at West Aurora. I'm very proud Blackhawk. And I think I'll be here for the next 25 years. So
isn't it funny how life prepares you for things when you don't realize that's what's happening, like from both education, but also, like you said, like you'd worked in retail before, you'd worked in food before, that at the time you don't think that those things are preparing you for whatever next stage of your life.
You know, you keep following your passion and things will come together, because at the very core of it, you know, I had been working in retail and culinary and hospitality. Those are people businesses. Education is people business. Education is a people business. Absolutely. And I I do think that because I didn't know where I wanted to be, it helps me help my students more, that it, you know, like keep exploring, keep taking other classes. And I love, love, love School District 129 for having a shopping mall model. There's so many options. Explore what your passion is while your education is free.
Oh, absolutely. And we've given a few shout outs already, but yes. one of the core concepts of the show is that everyone has had a teacher who helped inspire them, helped them become who they are today. And again, that could be a counselor, that could be a coach, it could be your fourth grade teacher, it could be a book or a movie that you watched that taught you a lot about yourself or something about the world. When you're thinking about it right now, again, it doesn't have to be just one person, doesn't have to be just, what's coming to your mind now as you're thinking about the educators you've had in your life that have made a big difference on you?
Well, I am very fortunate that I've had many wonderful educators, but it's got to be Mr. Walter Downing.
Mr. Walter Downing.
He's my guy. He did such a great job of connecting with us, and he is such a great model of you have to build the relationship with the student before you ask them to do something. And I had him for 2 years in high school for English class, and I just always knew that he was in my corner, and he's good people. And I sometimes, you know, even as an educator, I'll think about like what would I do that would make Mr. Downing proud, you know, like thinking about that. I also had a phenomenal woman for student teaching, Miss Nancy Kroll. She always put students first. And then I'd say I'm a better teacher today because of working with Stacy Enslin Peretz and Katie Phillips. So I'm very thankful for those women. Stacy Enslin was an advisor with me for FCCLA for 10 years, and her motto was what's best for kids. I'd say doing what's best for kids is you almost always going to be harder for the teacher, but it's going to have the biggest payback for both the teacher and the student. And so that it's worth the extra effort. And I'm thankful for her for teaching me that while I had the 10 years to work with her that I did. And then Katie Phillips and I teach technology integration courses for teachers all throughout the state of Illinois. And Katie Phillips does such a wonderful job of finding ways to make something that could be really hard and really boring really fun. And I'm always inspired by what she comes up to do for both her young adult students and her certified staff member attendees.
All right. Well, Katie, I did not have too many more questions for you. And I think you kind of answered the one that I always like to end with, which we always ask people, what's something about being a teacher you wish more people knew? I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that last one. But if you have anything else to add.
I something about teaching I wish other people knew. I'd say I wish more people knew that being a student doesn't mean you understand how to be a teacher.
Any tips for people who want to get more into either cooking or interior design? Can we give any last like 101 tidbits for folks to think about?
I'd say culinary, a great way to learn how to be a great chef is to also eat a variety of foods and open your palate, because there's more to it than what you've experienced so far. So be open to learning from others. And interior design, I'd say don't be afraid of color. We have a beautiful world, and color has such a dramatic impact on our spaces. Don't be afraid to use it.
There you go. Perfect. And, you know, I was thinking about, I mentioned that my dad graduated from West Aurora High School, and I was thinking during our conversation, and in fact, he always talks about when he was at West Aurora, taking a cooking class and learning how to make an omelet really fueled an interest in cooking, which I'm sure in turn fueled my interest in cooking. So the West Aurora Family and Consumer Services has been making an impact since at least the mid-70s for me. So thank you.
I bet I know who his teacher was.
That was West Aurora High School Family and Consumer Science teacher Katie Armstrong. Thank you so much to everyone for listening to Teacher's Lounge. And as always, you can feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on this show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Katie. Send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. And wherever you're hearing the podcast, subscribe, leave us a rating, and share so we can get even more perspectives on the show. You can subscribe to our Teachers Lounge newsletter if you want to keep up to date with everything happening with the show. You can find a link to do that on this episode's page over at wnij.org. A big, hearty thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for providing the awesome music you hear in our show. I've been your host, Peter Medlin, and we'll be back with a very special episode of Teacher's Lounge coming very soon. See ya.